Powiedz, powiedz czemu świat twój milczy cały blady od wzruszeń. Niczym słońce zaćmione przez księżyc, czekające na chwilę poruszeń.
You're listening to WNZK, Dearborn Heights, Detroit, your ethnic superstation, 690 days, 680 nights.
This is Radio Bali, broadcast every Friday here at WNZK Radio, 690 AM, hosted by syndicated columnist Ray Hanania and Layla Al-Husseini. Get information on show guests and topics by visiting radiobali.com. We want to hear your views. Call in during the show by dialing 248-557-3300. And now, Radio Balladi.
And good morning and welcome to Radio Balladi. I'm Ray Hanania here at WNZK AM 690. It is Friday morning, September 21st, 2012. I'm really happy to be here. We're brought to you by a number of sponsors, Ziad Brothers Importing at Ziad.com, Jake's Candy, Icon Computers, the Law Offices of Stephen Lagana, and the American Muslim Center. And we also are proud to support a number of great publications like Sabeel Media, the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, and great friends like our good friend Jemana K. Ruse. At JumanaKRuse.com. Also, Life for Relief, and a special thanks to Dr. Bassem DeBibo. This whole week has really been disturbing, in part because it's this debate over the anti-Muslim video that was produced in this country by a Coptic Christian who claimed that he was an Israeli-American. Now, it's not hard to believe that he would have been Israeli-American, because many Israelis produce such vicious, hateful speech and material against Muslims and Arabs and Palestinians. But it was disturbing because there was a debate over this issue of free speech. And this is how they're using free speech against Americans who happen to be Arab and Muslim, who happen to support freedom in the Middle East. They use free speech to say that it's okay, this is what they're saying, that it's okay to defame Islam or the Prophet Muhammad or Muslims. That's okay. Every day, like I picked up the Wall Street Journal today, and that's their big argument. There's stories all over the media about how Arabs don't get it, they keep saying. Muslims and Arabs don't get it, that free speech is the foundation of America. And then, of course, what they don't tell you is that if you happen to criticize Israel, you will have your job taken away from you. You might even be arrested and charged with all kinds of crimes in the United States. That's the hypocrisy that I think is very important, that needs to be addressed, because the mainstream American media doesn't talk about that. It doesn't talk about how there's a bill in the state of California legislature right now that says that you may not criticize the state of Israel in your college. And if you do, if you're a student in one of those colleges in California and you criticize Israel, you're going to be thrown out of school. Now, nobody says that you're going to be murdered or killed. But nobody says in the Middle East either that just because we don't, support the defamation, of Islam or the Prophet Muhammad or Arabs, that we're going to kill anybody either. Out of all the protests, maybe several thousand people, maybe tens of thousands, they don't even represent the majority of Arabs that live in the Middle East. And out of all those protests, there's such a minor, small amount resorted to violence. Yet they turn to that violence like the killing of Ambassador Stevens, and they say that it represents what we're trying to do. No, it doesn't represent what we're trying to do. It has nothing to do with what we're trying to do. It has to do with the right. They said they brought democracy to Libya, right? Isn't that what they said? We fought, and, you know, they fought to bring democracy to the people of Libya. But when the people of Libya want to exercise that democracy by protesting against the U.S. embassies, saying that, you know, the defamation of Muslims and Prophet Muhammad and Islam and Arabs. And by the way, you Christian Arabs out there, don't think that you're not being attacked, because you are. You are being attacked. And if you think there's a difference between Christians and Muslims, you are absolutely wrong. You are being attacked, and you need to recognize that when they attack a Muslim, they are also attacking a Christian Arab. And if you don't see that, then you're blinding yourself, and that's one reason why we're such easy targets in this country. That guy who produced that video, that hate video attacking Islam from the Coptic Christian community, is a bigot. He's not a representative of the Coptic Christian community, and Coptic Christians should stop defending him, because it's outrageous. That's not what we do as Christians. We don't attack other religions, but we can criticize a government, a foreign policy of a foreign government in Israel. We could do that, and we have a right to do that. It's 5 minutes after 8 o'clock here at Radio Ballady. We've invited two great guests on to call in, because another topic we want to talk about that's been overshadowed tragically by this whole hypocritical debate over free speech that is not taking place properly, and that's our fault as Arabs. Our organizations, our Arab organizations, these so-called political leaders, you know, in Washington, D.C., who say that they have the best interests of our community in mind, they're not doing enough. They're incompetent. They don't know how to do this. It's so tragic. It makes me cry when I look at how weak the organization is of these groups in Washington, D.C. I'm just, like, depressed, and I wonder, how is it that we can even stand up as American Arabs and defend ourselves when the people that we help put in office, these organizations that we donate to, don't defend us? And that debate has overshadowed, this whole free speech debate has really kind of pushed aside a very important discussion and focus on what's happening in Syria. And you notice the double standard here, when it was Libya and all that oil was available and at risk, they really went to war. And they fought to get, you know, the Muammar Gaddafi out. And I'm glad he's gone. He was a tyrant and a dictator. But don't think that they went to Libya because they wanted to bring freedom. That's not what it was. The Italians and the British and NATO wanted to protect their oil interests in Libya. And that's the only reason they went into Libya, to unseat Muammar Gaddafi, who only a couple years before they had made deals with and agreements with and were talking with. So they didn't. They just saw it as an opportunity to, hey, things are going bad, let's just go into Libya and take everything. And that's what they've done. And now when the Libyan people say, hey, you brought democracy to us, we can stand up and protest against you, right? We're saying, no, how ungrateful you are. How dare you use free speech? You're not allowed to have free speech. It's so hypocritical, people. But the real tragedy is that Syria is being pushed aside in this debate over Libya and the protests in the Arab world. Now, both of them should be at the forefront, and we need to double our efforts to make sure that the public doesn't forget about what's happening in Syria, because thousands of innocent people are being killed in Syria. Last week, I was proud to be in Detroit, where I was able to attend a dinner that was hosted by the Syrian Sunrise Foundation and also the Syrian American Medical Society. And we've invited two of their leaders to come on board, if they can, this morning. We're hoping they're going to call in Dr. Malaz El-Atassi and Dr. Opad El-Zohaili. One of them, hopefully, will be calling in to talk to us about, you know, what is being done. Because so much is being done, you know, to help the Syrian victims of the violence. We hope everything is going to be you know, working really well. So they need support, and they were raising money for humanitarian aid, and they were looking forward to you know, raising money. And it's not that they're involved in any kind of, you know, effort to engage the political system. They're just trying to raise money so that these innocent civilians who are being killed, and you know what, when men and women and children are being killed, you can't look at those people and say that they're terrorists. They're not terrorists. These are kids that are being killed, and they don't have the medical equipment because the government of Syria will not allow them to be treated. They won't allow them to be treated. That's unheard of. It's outrageous. If in fact, what's happening is that the people of Syria are setting up medical centers and treatment centers all over the country. You know, these field hospitals. Because the government won't allow you, if you're viewed as somebody they've targeted and assaulted and tried to kill, they won't allow you to get medical treatment. They won't allow you to get any assistance. So we're going to hopefully have Dr. Malaz El-Atassi and Dr. Alped El-Zahali call us in here at 248-557-3300 and talk to us. Because we got such a crowded schedule today, I don't think we can take phone calls. I wish we could. You know, we only have an hour, but I don't know if we can, you know, take the phone calls. But let's go to our first guest, Dr. Malaz El-Atassi, who has called into the radio station, and he can tell us about some of the amazing things that fundraising has done to bring medical and humanitarian relief. We're not talking about politics. We're talking about helping civilians, men, women, and children, old people that have been injured in a conflict. Whatever you think of the conflict, those are our people, the Syrian people, and we need to help them. Dr. El-Atassi, thank you so much for calling in this morning.
Sure. Thank you so much. To unlike what's happening in Syria and the humanitarian crisis and the medical crisis there.
Yeah, and I wish I could do more, and I'm really sorry that I messed up on Saturday because, and just for our listeners, we had three big events that the Syrian Sunrise Foundation and the Syrian American Medical Society organized, one in Detroit, one in Chicago, and one in Cleveland. And I think I took too much thinking that I'd be able to drive there and back because I love Detroit so much. I was so excited to be there. You had such a great program that night with Roger Dale, the painter who did that painting of the replica of Guernica, which is Picasso's effort to help the Spanish Civil War in 1937, and they're doing the same thing to help the people of Syria. I was impressed, Dr. El-Atassi, about the information that was presented at the dinner that I attended in Detroit. Can you tell us how serious is the condition of the people in Syria? And I'm talking about the civilians. What are some of the problems that we're seeing there?
The condition is more than any brain can really imagine. Inside Syria, there are 2.5 displaced civilians. Displaced meaning people lost their houses, and they had to run away from where they live without any clothes, without any medicine, without any money, without nothing. They left everything behind, and they live in a tent, in the street, in public areas, school buildings. So 2.5 million people at least are refugee inside Syria. About 500,000 are refugee outside Syria. We counted about by name, documented by name, about 50,000 orphans. Now, orphans, most of the time, they lost their parents, but not necessarily. Probably they lost them, meaning they lost contact with them. They don't know where they are. We don't know the names of the children. We cannot identify their identity.
So it could be a case where the family's been separated, broken up, and you just have children who just don't have their parents with them. It's possible they're still alive.
Exactly. A few months ago, many buses, that was early in the year, in April and May, many buses came in from home to Damascus, full of children. We counted about 2,000 of those. with no parents. He stopped in downtown Damascus. Whoever can come and pick up one or two, three children or walk away was allowed without any documentation, without taking any names, anything.
Wow.
Just needed someone to come and take the kids to feed them and give them shelter. So the size of the disaster is really unbelievable.
It sounds like a humanitarian crisis taking place in Syria. I mean, you know, everybody wants to focus on the political side, but it seems like what's being missed is the humanitarian side.
It is a humanitarian crisis. It is really a humanitarian crisis. And I don't know how this crisis is going to unfold, how we can approach all this. In homes, you have 60, 70% of the homes are destroyed completely. And you are talking about an expensive real estate over there. To rebuild it, it's very expensive. The infrastructure is gone. The area is becoming unlivable. So even if we step in, how to fix it, I don't know. What we are trying to do at the Syrian Sunrise Foundation and Syrian American Medical Society is really to put a Band-Aid on a bleeding wound.
Wow.
We have been trying to collect funds and send medical supplies. At Syrian Sunrise Foundation, we have collected about $5 million over the past 9 months. We already sent about $4 million to people in different areas in Syria, to Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey for the medical part. We have hundreds of severely wounded people. Civilian, we are talking of civilians. They need very expensive medical care. We are trying to collect some cases and fund them and help them to recover from their injuries. The $5 million sounds a lot of money, but it's really nothing.
Right. It barely. Listen, I went to the hospital a few months ago, and it cost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars just for some routine little, you know, procedure, and people do that. So when you think of $5 million, you're thinking of maybe the cost of really a few families, you know, a number of families with serious medical things. How do you treat 30,000, you know, or 50,000 families that have injuries? And, you know, with $5 million, it seems overwhelming. I don't know how. You know, as a human being, it must be depressing for you.
It is very depressing. It is. You're absolutely right. Every day I receive many phone calls from Syria and outside Syria for people asking for help. And it's very depressing to turn these people away. Tell them, you know, I can't help you. We don't have money. We can't. It's very depressing. Often we had to cry just to vent out. You know, Ray, If you want to feed 2.5 million and you spend $2 per day per person, that's
right.
$6 million. That's right there.
A day.
We are talking one day.
Wow.
So,
we're talking with Dr. Malaz El-Atassi. He's with the Syrian Sunrise Foundation and also the Syrian American Medical Society. Dr. Atassi, can you hang on 1 second? We have to take a break. And when we come back, I just want the listeners to learn more about this humanitarian crisis, this human crisis, not political crisis. That we're not talking about politics. We're talking about people, our sisters, our brothers, people just like us who are in Syria today, who are suffering because they don't have the proper medical care. And I know that you and others are working very hard, you know, to try and help address that. Do you mind if you just hang on just a minute while we do these commercials?
I sure will.
All right. Jim, let's take a break, and we're going to do two breaks, and then when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with our first guest, Dr. Malaz El-Atassi, and really the heart-wrenching story of people who need help, who need our support. We can do more. You know, we can do more to help them, and we should be doing more, and we should set aside politics to help them raise the humanitarian support and aid that they need. I'm Ray Hanania. You're listening to Radio Ballady here at WNZK AM 690. It is September 21st. Our website, radioballady.com. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue the discussion right after these messages.
Jake's Candy, 2-for-$1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available, wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade, now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sully at 718-213-1264, or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
Whether it's makluba, warak dawali, tabbouleh, hummus, mensif, or any of more than 1,000 great Middle Eastern recipes, Ziad Brothers Importing is your best source for Mediterranean food products. Ziad Brothers Importing distributes products under the Ziad name and also many other labels, such as Sultan Extra Virgin Olive Oil, and Dana Lebna and Dana Cheese. Try their ready-to-serve microwavable instant side pilafs, including couscous with tomato sauce, roasted green wheat pilaf, cracked wheat pilaf, and rice and lentil pilaf. All tasty, natural, healthy, and authentic Mediterranean dishes from the microwave to the table in minutes. Ziad food products are available at all major food and grocery stores in Dearborn, Chicago, Windsor, Canada, and around the country. If you can't find the product you want, just ask your grocer to stock them. For more information on food or recipes, visit Ziad Brothers Importing online at www.ziad.com. Ziad offers the best Mediterranean food products from our family to yours.
Icon Computer Megastore. Mention Radio Ballady for great deals. Computers and laptops from $99. Apple computers from $129. Warranties included. Shipping available. Free layaway plans. Arabic to English keyboards, $5. Mouses, $5. Repairs for iPods, iPads, Apple computers, and PCs. Icon Computer Megastore on Greenfield, north of Warren Avenue in Dearborn. Mention Radio Ballady. Call today, 313-582-3100. 313-582-3100.
SevilleMedia.com is a wellspring of media arts. SevilleMedia.com tells God's story through short films, drama, poetry, music, and the internet. And you have free media downloads. Go to SevilleMedia.com and listen to Nasheed, based on the Psalms of the Prophet David, for free downloads in several Arabic dialects of stories, short films, poetry, and music. Go to SevilleMedia.com.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania here at WNZK AM 690. We're here every Friday for 1 hour from 8 to 9 o'clock in Detroit, broadcast on the internet. You can listen to us not only on the internet by going to our website at radioballady.com, but if you have a cell phone, you can listen on your cell phone as you're traveling around. Maybe you're not in the Detroit area or in Michigan. We have a lot of listeners in Chicago, a lot of listeners in Ohio. You can go to radioramica.com, and you can also dial with your cell phone to 712-432-8008, 712-432-8008. We have so many important topics in the American Arab community, and we need to stay connected to talk with each other. We're talking with Dr. Malaz El-Atassi, and we've just also been joined by Dr. Apad El-Zohaili, who I want to welcome. We have both Dr. El-Zohaili and Dr. El-Atassi on the line. Let's welcome Dr. El-Zohaili and say hello, and maybe ask him to also join us in trying to describe for listeners the humanitarian crisis that the civilians in Syria face today, and what's being done. Dr. El-Zohaili, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much, and I apologize for calling late, but I've been listening to what he's saying. And one of the points you stated was it's so important that it's a humanitarian, it's medical, it's a need, it's non-political. And we talked before, how is
your political agenda or your political side in which way you go can make you not help. When helping a poor, needy person or injured person can be a political issue. We always help regardless of what that person political issue is. That's unfortunately the problem. It's just we get accused when you try to help the injured Syrians everywhere in Syria, all around, and try to send, say, now you are putting a political side and say, how is that? How is helping an injured, needy person? So sometimes we talk to the people here in this area that are refusing to help, refusing to say, because of they have all these political reasons. They say, how can that be? The injured children, you have thousands and thousands of injured children. You have over 10 million people displaced from their houses. These people don't care what's going on. They just outside their houses. They lost their medicine. We just finished a phone call this morning with the pharmacy relatives in Syria. She said that I'm going to people who are inside Damascus, displaced from one area because of the airplane and bombardments of that neighborhood. They moved to another neighborhood. By rushing, they forgot their blood pressure medicine, their cholesterol medicine, their sugar medicine, and now they are risking it. And there's patients who are on dialysis, who have renal failure. There's patients who cannot live without these medicines for even one day. And when they are displaced, now they're out of these resources, they're out of their medication. All what they need is just some kind of help in getting these medicines, and there's no way they can get back to their houses and get it. And they're rushed out of their houses in a way that they don't have it. So it's a simple medication can save a life. Well, somebody who's just fleeing his life, he doesn't care what's going on. He just heard airplane bombing his house, and he just went somewhere else. And now he's risking his life just because he doesn't have any medication. How is helping that one particular person makes you a political agent?
Yeah, I agree. It's ridiculous for people to respond when you say you want to help the people of Syria to say, oh, it's the politics, it's the government, or it's the terrorists, or it's the civilians. The fact is, I don't know how I could stand by and see a man, a woman, a child, an old person suffering from an injury. And hundreds of thousands of them are at risk here. And it's beyond me. So I think what you are doing through the Syrian Sunrise Foundation and the Syrian American Medical Society is exactly the right thing. And everybody should be helping you and doing everything they can to donate money, I guess. What's the main thing that the public can do to help you?
Well, definitely money. We are in need. We face with the phone calls with our offices in Turkey and Jordan, and on a daily basis, trying to see assess what are the needs, and we try to employ people to help, try to help the physician inside who's helping people. We're trying to send medical supply. So one of the ways definitely will be the easy way would be money, sending money to these organizations who are sending their support and help to the cities inside. They have the connection. They have the ways of actually these supplies are getting into Syria. And one of the ways is person, somebody who doesn't have the money but has the time and has the can volunteer. There's a lot of work, a lot of physical work that can be done. For example, tomorrow we have a warehouse here in Detroit where we get shipments from hospitals and donated medical equipment. It takes a lot of work. It's a container full of medical supply that we have to go through by one, see what are the needed ones, and pack them and get them ready to be shipped to Syria through Turkey. And it's also a lot of physical work. We have families sometimes that they're older children to help. So that's one way of also helping. Of course, somebody can think of another ways. And one of the other ways also politically, just calling your senator, calling your friends, and trying to call to get the public awareness of what's going on in Syria. It looks like for the last few months, there's no interest at all. It's people look at these as no number. Say, well, okay, well, another 200 killed today in Syria, another 250, another 10,000 refugees, another 5,000. It becomes a boring story, but a silly movie somewhere makes a whole war collapse on a silly story, but people are dying every day. It doesn't now get any attention, doesn't even get media. So try to get people to be, the crisis is still going on. It is not a boring story for the people who are being killed and displaced every day. It's a true story. It's a suffering story. And unless you have relatives whom you talk to every day and see what's going on, then some people are becoming just distant from the story. It becomes to them like, oh, it's the same day story. What, 200, 250? It's a number.
Right. And let's ask Dr. Elatassi, who's also on the line. And I think that Dr. El-Zahali made a good point that, you know, obviously money is what's needed to pay for the medicine and the humanitarian, you know, the equipment, the medical equipment. But also, it doesn't take much for a person to sit down, write a letter to their local congressman and say, look, I'm asking you to support sending money to help the people of Syria, you know, to provide medical relief. Is that what they should be doing, do you think, Dr. Elatassi?
Yeah, you know, sending letters to congressmen, senators, and politicians really does help. So, especially before election time, these politicians need to feel the heat of the streets to respond. You know, everything in America is driven by election, and it is the time to step in and support humanity. We are not talking political, we are talking humanity. We need the support from everyone, Arab and Arab, Muslim and Muslim. It is about the humanity, and it is about the world has failed to respond to a humanitarian call. So we need to show that we do care about any life anywhere in the world. The other thing, talking about financial help, anyone can go to our website at Syrian Sunrise Foundation. It is very easy. SSFUSA.org. SSFUSA.org. They can donate. All donations are tax deductible. And there are few videos online. They can see about what we have done so far. And I think Sam also have the website. Ubaida Bali can tell us the website for Michigan chapter. But we need any help. Anything is really appreciated. A dollar is good. $100,000 is the same good as $1. We need help. It is a call to everyone that we really in dear need for money to help those people.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're talking about medical supplies too and relief. And, you know, at the event in Detroit last week, the photos, I have to tell you, the photos of little children that are injured and how brave they are. What a sacrifice. What did the little children do? They did nothing. You know, they were injured, and then to have somebody, you know, in this country arguing that, you know, oh, this is about politics. No, there's a little child that needs help. Why don't we help that child? I can't see any Arab in good conscience, any Christian Arab, any Muslim Arab. I can't see any Christian American or any Muslim American turning away and saying, no, I can't help that child. And there are thousands of children and victims, aren't there? I mean, give us an overview of who's being hurt in this conflict. If maybe Dr. Elatassi or Dr. El-Zahali.
Well, you know, civilians are mainly the victims of this conflict. Probably 90% of the injured people are civilians, or probably more than 90%. What's happening, and it's unfortunate, the Free Syrian Army, when they go to an area and the Syrian regime tries to attack them, they cannot reach them. They end up throwing a bomb on a bakery or on a gas station. And that leads to a huge amount of destruction and killing. So people flee to different areas, and the fight goes right after them, and they flee again, and they emigrate again, and displaced again. So civilians are the victim of this conflict. We need to help them. fundraising in Detroit where you attended, we did not show any really images that might make people emotional. We tried to be very conservative on the images we put. However, there are images are unbelievable. Yesterday, I've seen an image of a girl, probably 5-6 years old, going to a wedding. So she's all dressed up and her head gone.
That's so sad.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I was just telling Dr. Elatassi, the emotional price that, you know, you as individuals have to pay and we as a community, it's just phenomenal how anybody could sit back and see this kind of suffering and not help is beyond me. And I think that, you know, even with all the fundraising that's being done, it's not enough. We really need the U.S. government to step in and provide funding, you know, so that they have the medical equipment. Explain the situation, either of you. And by the way, for our listeners, we have Dr. Apad El-Zahali and Dr. Malaz El-Atassi on. They're with two very important organizations, the Syrian Sunrise Foundation. And as Dr. El-Atassi pointed out, that website is sssusa.org. Dr. El-Zahali is with the Syrian American Medical Society. These are humanitarian groups, and we could, they could use a lot of your support. But we need to get some big money from governments because the situation, I understand, is very hard, that they're not taking or there isn't room in the hospitals, you know, for all these injured, and that there are field hospitals that are being set up. And they become targets too, don't they?
Ray, let me tell you, just our last couple of days was one phone conference. We had a project yesterday. It's one of these stories. When we hear that there was an airplane came and threw a few bombs on northern suburbs of Aleppo, Halab, and there were 10 people killed. What we don't get from that story, there's probably 500 people injured. Seriously.
Wow.
And the problem happening is these people have no way. And I've talked to some of the doctors who volunteers in that area, and they say it's so sad when you see somebody bleeding to death from a small cut that could be treated if you have the right medical equipment. Transporting the patients from that area into a safe area close to the borders between Syria and Turkey, half of the people are dying on the way. There's no way of transporting. If you put anybody in an ambulance, ambulance can be targeted right away and blown up right away. Trying to get people into a safe, bigger hospital takes sometimes hours, and these injured people do not have hours. Majority of these people, so when you hear this 200, and there's 500 injured, probably only 10 or 20, it will make it a large hospital in Turkey to be actually treated. On the way, there's absolutely nothing. One of the ways is people just blood loss. It's just a simple blood loss. One of the projects we're talking about yesterday is a blood bank. Having a blood bank in that area where we establish a building, protect it, and it's still a risk of being targeted. But a blood bank that shipments can go to and people can donate blood. They will have blood available for the injured. At least have a blood supply or give them one unit of blood just to keep them alive till they make it to a hospital. Unfortunately, the only functioning hospital inside is a small hospital that is run by a couple doctors. And unfortunately, these doctors are being targeted. These hospitals are being targeted all the time. That despite all the work they do, when they when they're targeted by the airplanes, all the equipment, everything is gone. They have to relocate, build a new place, move their equipment. Now you lost the only few doctors who are brave enough to work under a condition where they are knowing. They're operating on somebody, and they know at any second a rocket is going to hit them, and they will be killed right away. But they are continuing to work in these conditions. We lose these brave doctors. Every time we lose one, it's like losing 10,000 doctors because we don't have 10,000 doctors to work with. It's very few who actually agree to this kind of brave work. So we need to support them. We need the financial to support these doctors. These people left their houses, their children, they left their clinic, their work. They're 24/7 in these tiny small field hospitals, risking their life. Some of them, they swear they work 3-4 days without a sleep, especially surgical specialty. What can you do when a flux of injured people come into your place? But also what they complain, it's not only that the doctors complain that we don't have the equipment, we don't have the blood supply, we don't have the medication, we don't have the equipment to save these people. And that's what we're trying to do. And every time we have it, it's a whole negotiation with companies trying to buy companies. One of the simple equipment, for example, a simple Doppler machine that can find an artery. You see somebody bleeding in front of you, you have no idea where he's bleeding, and he can die within minutes unless you find the source of the bleeding. So a simple Doppler machine where you can just locate exactly where the pulse is, where does it stop, and then locate where the bleeding is and grab it and stop it and stabilize with a simple machine, like a Doppler machine. One of our doctors, our vice president of the chapter, just went to Turkey with 10 of these Doppler machines, but you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars worth. Some of the trauma ultrasound we talked about, we just took 10 ultrasound machines. These equipment cost a lot of money, so the need are humongous because of the casualties, the number of people that could easily be saved if we have the right medical equipment for them.
And Dr. Elatassi, maybe we can get a final word from you, and we want to thank Dr. El-Zahaly also. Maybe some thoughts, Dr. Elatassi, and just driving home, what is it that listeners can and should be doing? We only got a couple more minutes here, but I'm going to try to do my best to highlight this each week as long as this crisis is going on, because we are talking about civilians, and people shouldn't lose sight of the fact that we're talking about helping civilians. All right. Dr. Elatassi, you get the final word, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Ray. I cannot thank you enough, Ray, for what you have done so far.
Well, I haven't done enough, and the more I get into it, the more I realize that, you know, when we're talking about life and death, we're really not doing enough. We should be doing more, and there are simple things that we can do that, you know, that if everybody did, it would make a huge difference.
Exactly. We need the media support. We need the public support. The public support we need, number one, we need, again, financial help. Ray, you saw the French artist and his student. They came in all the way from France, and they toured with us in Detroit, Chicago, and Cleveland for nothing but help the Syrian people. They are not Arab, not Muslim. They never knew any Syrian person. I just happened to meet them in France, and they came in all the way just to help us. So we are counting on our community here to help. Please help us, help the Syrian people, help the humanity. So call for help is going to be our number one priority. We need help from all our community. And they've been generous. They have donated, but the war has not stopped, and God has not stopped giving us health and wealth and family. So we need your help. And again, help, please.
And I want to thank Dr. Opedel Zahaly and Dr. Malaz Elatassi. They're both working with two very important organizations, the Syrian Sunrise Foundation, and their website, by the way, is sssusa.org, and also the Syrian American Medical Society. And we'll put
SAMSMichigan.org.
Pardon me? SAMS Michigan?
SAMS Michigan, so SAMSMI.org.
All right, and what I'll do is I'll put links to both of those on our website at Radio Ballady to help get the word out and continue to get the word out. And I know that we're going to do more to help at least to try our best to raise awareness in the media and also get the attention of the government, because that's the way to do it. Listen, Dr. El-Zahaly and Dr. Elatassi, it was a pleasure meeting you guys last week, and we'll talk again very soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome. It is 43 minutes after the hour here at Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania. Our website is radioballady.com. We're going to take one more break, and we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk with David Lopez. He's the General Counsel of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, who's touring, I think, Michigan to talk about and listening to American Arabs and the community about in the Arab and Muslim community what is happening. So we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk with David Lopez right after these messages.
Jake's Candy, two for $1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sully at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
Whether it's makluba, warak dawali, tabbouleh, hummus, mensif, or any of more than 1,000 great Middle Eastern recipes, Ziad Brothers Importing is your best source for Mediterranean food products. Ziad Brothers Importing distributes products under the Ziad name and also many other labels, such as Sultan Extra Virgin Olive Oil, and Dana Lebna and Dana Cheese. Try their ready-to-serve microwavable instant side pilafs, including couscous with tomato sauce, roasted green wheat pilaf, cracked wheat pilaf, and rice and lentil pilaf. All tasty, natural, healthy, and authentic Mediterranean dishes from the microwave to the table in minutes. Ziad food products are available at all major food and grocery stores in Dearborn, Chicago, Windsor, Canada, and around the country. If you can't find the product you want, just ask your grocer to stock them. For more information on food or recipes, visit Ziad Brothers Importing online at www.ziad.com. Ziad offers the best Mediterranean food products from our family to yours.
The American Muslim Center works for the community. It establishes goodness, virtue, and develops relationships between the Muslim communities as well as regional and national non-Muslim communities. The American Muslim Center on Outer Drive in Dearborn. Call 313-565-9314 or visit AmericanMuslimCenter.org. Good news. As of November 17th, immigration has been given new instructions to review and close all pending cases. If you're in immigration proceedings, call attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Free consultation for Michigan residents. Mention Radio Baladi. For the latest in immigration law, Stephen Lagana specializes in immigration and federal court proceedings. Visas of all kinds, deportation, court appeals, open refugee status, and much more. All immigration cases are currently pending review. It's time to get the right attorney working for you. Call immigration attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Mention Radio Baladi. That's 617-283-1018.
And welcome back to Radio Baladi. I'm Ray Hanania. Our website is radiobaladi.com. You go there, you get all the information you need on our broadcast in Detroit. And our exchange with the public about very important issues. One little note I'll pass on is that this Sunday is my last Sunday to do Radio Chicagoland. I've been doing it 5 years. Unfortunately, we just don't have the funds to keep it going, so I have to shut down the Chicago radio show that focuses on American, Arab, and Muslim issues in Chicago. So this Sunday is my last show. We just don't have the money or the support. And to be honest, all the hate that we get, you know, in form of email and calls and threatening phone calls. I had to block my phone the other day. And you punch *77 to stop anonymous calls, you know, from coming in with all the different kinds of hate that we're, you know, we have to tolerate as Arabs and Muslims just because we express our free speech that apparently is a big issue in this country. We are proud and privileged to be able to introduce David Lopez, who is the General Counsel of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, which is a very important government agency. He was nominated by President Obama to take that position as General Counsel in 2009, and he's been working very, very hard on that very topic of defending the rights of everybody in the United States, but also including American Arabs and American Muslims. Mr. Lopez, welcome to the radio show this morning, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ray. It's a pleasure to be here.
I know you're doing a lot, and there, you know, we talk about this post 911 backlash. It's just phenomenal how it continues, and I wonder if you can give us an overview of some of the cases that you're dealing with, and how severe is it? Are we still seeing a backlash of hate and anger against American Arabs and Muslims?
Yes, I think unfortunately so, that discrimination against the Arab and Muslim communities persists. Right after 9/11, the EEOC was very proactive in terms of trying to get out ahead of the issue of backlash discrimination against the Arab, Muslim, Middle Eastern communities. And we did this in many ways. We did this through the issuance of policy fact sheets and policy guidances to the public, outreach to the employer community and to the Arab community, and also through enforcement actions, through litigation. We would challenge specific cases of discrimination against Arabs and Muslims in the workplace. And some of these cases are pretty egregious. Since that time, we've filed about 90 cases across the country. You know, there are really a couple of classes of cases. One class of case involves some of the hate that you were talking about earlier with respect to the show is something that many employees unfortunately encounter in the workplace.
Right.
Against the law.
And just to be clear for our listeners, the EEOC, obviously you don't deal with hate across the board. You deal with hate involving your employment. So if you're employed as an Arab and Muslim, and that's not to say there aren't areas to go to, you know, for support outside of employment, but when you're employed someplace, and like I remember when I was working as a senior VP of communications in Chicago, on September 11th, that half the employees are coming up to me and yelling, "Oh, it's your people and you people should be out of here." I'm going, "Whoa, wait a minute." It must be huge when you're in your workplace and you face hatred, because you're caught between wanting to stand up and say, you know, that hate is terrible, and on the other hand, you're afraid you're going to lose your job. You know, so sometimes hatred in the workplace is far more threatening than it is in everyday society.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the whole goal of the EEOC is to make sure that that all people have the opportunity to realize the full extent of their talents and to contribute to the society. And often individuals face barriers in the workplace because they suffer harassment and discrimination. So we recently settled a case against Four Points by Sheraton in Phoenix that involved an Iraqi-American individual who was whose accent was mimicked, and, you know, they were mocking Arab vocal expressions and ethnic slurs and taunting and jeering on a regular basis. And he was brave enough to file a charge, and we ended up bringing a lawsuit. We were able to resolve that matter for $50,000. But what's even more important is when the commission resolves the case, we try to make sure that the company adopts training programs to make sure that that type of conduct never happens again. Now, the other thing that's important to remember that's very, very important, and something that we take very seriously at the EEOC, is that individuals have the right to participate in the EEOC's process. Individuals have the right to oppose discriminatory practices. So if they're subject to retaliation, that is also unlawful. If there's any type of retaliatory activity, that's also unlawful. So when I was a trial lawyer in Phoenix, I brought a case on behalf of a Moroccan individual who alleged national origin and religious discrimination, and we ended up trying that case to a very successful verdict in Phoenix, and we won that case on the whole retaliation issue. That individual was subject to retaliation because he had opposed discriminatory practices. That's our bread and butter. So it's really important that, you know, people feel comfortable and are protected if they raise issues of discrimination.
It is very difficult. I think you're in a, and I think you do a great job. And I know you're in Michigan, I believe, and just kind of talking to different groups and talking to your staff and everything about, you know, keeping vigilant and, you know, doing everything you can to defend everybody, And obviously, we're interested in Muslims and Arabs, but, you know, we're interested in fighting discrimination across the board, too, just like everybody is. So we really applaud that. But it must be really tough when you're in a employment situation for people that are discriminated. The idea they're worried about losing their job, you know, sometimes I could accept the hatred, you know, that people direct at me. But, you know, the idea of losing a job is very scary for people because you wonder, can I get another job? Will this haunt us? Just real quick, is that a major threat? And how do you protect people so that it doesn't come back to hurt them if they stand up to defend their rights?
Well, like I said, it's against the law to retaliate against someone for opposing discriminatory practices or participating in the process. And that will even include, you know, future job search efforts. So if someone's subject to retaliation and given a negative reference because he or she opposed discriminatory practices, that would also be unlawful under the anti-discrimination laws. And like I said, it's something that we're very vigilant about because it is really important for people to come forward. You know, we're talking about people's lives and people, you know, are trying right. to make a living and support their families. And what happens in these workplaces, you know, sometimes is very, very heartbreaking because, you know, you have individuals who are very motivated and really want to make a contribution, and yet they encounter this discriminatory activities. And, you know, they have to take it home with them. And sometimes it's hard to talk about it, and sometimes they don't talk about it when they go home.
And they love their jobs. I mean, you know, your career is like, you know, your most important thing. For many people, you know, losing, you know, a job means losing a career, and it's tough. We only have a couple minutes, Mr. Lopez. And believe me, I would love to keep you on because I think this is a very important topic. But I want to, because we only have a few minutes, I want to give you an opportunity if there's something that you want to, a message that you want to deliver to the people of, you know, the American Arabs and mainstream Americans who might be listening to our show. What is that you want them to take away from what you're trying to do?
Well, one thing I want to mention that we haven't talked about is the whole issue of religious discrimination, that under the anti-discrimination laws, an employer has an obligation to accommodate an individual's sincerely held religious beliefs, provided it doesn't create undue hardship. So we've had cases involving Muslims who wanted to wear a hijab and were either terminated or denied the accommodation. And, of course, that's not something that burdens the employer. So we just had this wonderful case against Abercrombie and Fitch that we won involving an applicant who applied at the store and then was denied the job because she wanted to observe her religion. So that's one thing I would mention. The other thing, just very generally, is, you know, our website has been revamped. I think it's fantastic. And right now, on the very first page, there's a site to all the work that we've done in this area. It's EEOC.gov, and that has a lot of information about the various cases we brought, about the various fact sheets, about the rights that individuals have. So I would encourage people to go to the website and see the work that we've done in this area. And the other thing, you know, that I would mention in the Detroit area is that if you believe that you've been a victim of discrimination, our office, our Detroit field office, is in the Patrick McNamara building, 477 Michigan Avenue, Detroit, Michigan. The phone number is 1-800-669-4000. And our staff, you know, has been involved in the community and is very attentive to these issues. So if an individual believes that they've been discriminated against, you know, just give us a holler.
Well, David Lopez, we really appreciate you, you know, coming on board, and we're more than welcome to help anytime moving forward in the future. If you have an event or something that you want to publicize, your office, the EEOC, is very important. And for listeners, again, that's EEOC.gov. If you want to go there and get information, David, we wish you the best, and you know, look forward to having an opportunity to speak to you again because you do a great job of fighting for the rights of all people, including Arabs, Muslims, Christian Arabs, Muslim Arabs, and people of every background and race. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. That was David Lopez, and He was kind enough. He's in Detroit, I believe, with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, addressing different cases and talking to the community. We only have a minute left. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. Again, unfortunately, the haters have won. I won't be able to do my Chicago radio show. You know, what are you going to do? It's over. So my last show is Sunday. And I just want to thank all the listeners from Detroit who would call in and email me about the Chicago show. They were listening online at RadioChicagoland.com. I really appreciate all the support that you gave me. I'm sorry I couldn't keep it up. And, you know, what are you going to do? Chicago's just another battle zone where we try to fight for the rights of Arabs and Muslims. And sometimes you don't always win, but we keep trying. Thank you for joining our show here. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
This is WNZK, Dearborn Heights.